was brought up in the presence of the Imams themselves, and they, ironically, they answered this objection at that time. And they said that when God spoke to the Lady Maryam in this way, he was referring to the women who existed in her time, meaning he chose her over the women, all of the women of her era. Whereas when the Prophet says this about Lady Fatima, or the Imam say this about her, is that they're actually referring to, as you can see from the hadith, he's referring to all of the women from all times and all eras. Right, so there's no contradiction between these two statements. You know, the verse of the Holy Quran and this hadith. This beautiful hadith has been transmitted in the famous book of Ahadith, Ma'ani al-Akhbar, on page 107, if those of our listeners want to reference it. Thank you for joining us here on Hadith of the Day. We were looking at the virtues of the Lady Fatima al-Zahra, Salamullah alayha, in the words of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. Until next time, wassalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha for the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
This one lay. Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. The Palestinians in Gaza are facing a multi-pronged U.S.-Israeli genocide. From the almost constant bombings from the air, tank shelling on the ground, sniper fire from regime troops in various areas in the Strip, along with kidnappings, Palestinians are also facing starvation and dehydration and a lack of medicine and medical supplies to heal their wounds. This as people have been displaced and are walking from the north to the south and back to the central areas of Gaza. Still, they are targeted no matter what part of the Gaza Strip they are in. Nowhere is safe in Gaza, as those who can stop the war either continue to support the regime or simply look the other way. I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Anthony Hall, Professor of Globalization, Lethbridge University. Harley Schlanger, spokesman of LaRouche organization out of Potsdam, Germany. Thank you both for being with us. I'd like to start it off with Anthony. I mean, as we are speaking, more children are being killed in Gaza. How can the world, our world governments, be so detached from this loss of life of Palestinian kids and just continue to let it happen?
It's really something to behold, something terrible, frightening, and appalling to behold. I never thought I would see such a thing. One of the things that Israel is going to have to deal with for the rest of its life is people around the world will say, Israel, that's the baby-killing country, right? They're the people who like to murder babies en masse. The idea that this is about eradicating Hamas and making this particular organization the subject of the war. No, this is a war of depopulation. This is a war of extermination. This is a genocidal, it's classic genocide. And there should by now be a process started, which could happen easily in the International Court of Justice, not in the ICC, the International Criminal Court, which is a puppet court, which is a Western U.S. dominated, you know, crap court. The International Criminal Court could pursue classic charges. This is a classic violation of the Genocide Convention. We need to consider, of course, you know, first and foremost, the human impact of people facing what the people inside this prison who, you know, briefly made a prison break, and the whole question of what really happened on October the 7th hasn't really been answered. There's so many mysteries about what really went on. But right now, as the world can't find a way to watch, of course, the Palestinians have this feeling of being abandoned, always abandoned. There'll be motions, there'll be bold words, but right now is a very clear illustration that there is no rule of law in this world, that at the highest level of criminality, the organized criminals get their way. And I'll end it there, but I look forward to a good exchange. Nice to see you, Marcy.
Nice seeing you, Anthony. Well, Harley, even if some kids are surviving the bomb attacks, I mean, many are dying from the lack of water, lack of food, lack of medical supplies. Why can't the crossings be open to allow these basic necessities, essentials, at least, to enter Gaza? Why isn't there more pressure to at least allow that to happen?
Well, I think I want to, first of all, agree with what Anthony said about this being a war of depopulation. This is an attempt to continue, after many years' absence, but although a continuing operation, the Nakba, the driving of the Palestinians out of Palestine. And they're going to do it through bombs. They're going to do it through disease. You know, it was very interesting to hear an Israeli doctor say that, well, we have to worry about disease because it might spread to the Israeli soldiers. But no concern for the Palestinian children and mothers and fathers who are facing disease every day from lack of clean water, lack of sanitation, and so on. And I think what I want to focus on is the fact that President Biden has, according to very well-placed sources, told Netanyahu, you have to finish this up by the end of January, because otherwise it will become out of control. The opposition to Israel will go out of control. Well, 2 points on that. First of all, how many more children will die by the end of January, number one? Number two, what makes you think Netanyahu will stop? He's not going to stop. He's going to go as long as he's given a free rein, and the United States is giving him a free rein. The other point that should be made is that most of the world has now at least indicated they oppose what's going on. The World Health Organization just came out and said there has to be not just supplies, humanitarian supplies, but a ceasefire. There's a cry for a ceasefire from much of the world, but it won't matter until the United States changes policy. Now, interesting, there was a poll that came out yesterday that showed that only 19% of Americans under 30 years old, that is the younger generation, only 19% support Biden's support of Netanyahu. Altogether, 61% now of U.S. voters are saying they want a permanent ceasefire. There was a letter released that was signed by 600 leaders of American Jewish organizations saying a ceasefire is a moral necessity. The problem is that Biden doesn't answer to the American people. He doesn't answer to the people of Palestine or the people of anywhere. He answers to the military-industrial machine that is totally willing to allow Israel to carry out this atrocity.
But Harley, let me just jump in here. Isn't it because it's really important, I think, the way all of this is being framed, as if it's Netanyahu and Biden. Isn't it both regimes in general, whether we're talking about the previous president and what happened when looking at Palestine, and also we look at the various prime ministers of the Israeli regime, it's not about these individuals, but it is about what these regimes are after to begin with.
It's about the system, and both of these regimes are part of a system of depopulation, which includes the economic oppression of most of the global south, which is starting to rise up. It includes the unwillingness to invest in health and infrastructure in these countries. But in this case, you're absolutely right. The whole Congress, virtually the whole U.S. Congress, is in unison on support for the Netanyahu regime. And even people in Israel and in the Knesset who are getting weak stomachs about what's going on, they're still not speaking out. So it is the two systems, and these two systems are largely controlled by an interlocking network of corporate cartels that cares not one bit for the lives of Palestinians, but will weep crocodile tears over the lives of Israelis.
Right, indeed. Well, Anthony, is this all about Americans and Israelis just wanting the resources of Gaza for themselves, or is it about the sheer hatred that they have for Palestinians? I mean, your assessment about it all.
Well, we could talk about Biden and we can talk about Netanyahu. And I do think that Netanyahu actually is a psychologically sick individual right now who probably needs to be in care. And, you know, somehow Israel is destroying itself by not taking his hands off the steering wheel, this madman who, you know, seems to be having a breakdown. But let's get away from, you know, okay, there's a corporate syndicate, large corporations, there's Netanyahu, there's Biden, but there's something called Zionism. Zionism, the philosophy that got rolling in terms of this project of establishing a Jewish state, this project that got rolling with Rothschild bankers, this project that has a lot to do with the same dynamics of the larger depopulation initiative in the world, which is a banking cartel thing to further the power of banking, which is closely interacted, which is closely intertwined with this thing called Zionism. And it seems to me that when we put the focus there, we're talking about Israel, we're talking about the United States. Both are in under the authority, the control of the same chain of command, which is a Zionist chain of command. And it's perfectly appropriate that Biden be considered every much and even possibly more so responsible than Netanyahu. But we have a system of Zionism, which is a system of Jewish supremacism, which is a system of Talmudic sort of breeding of hatred towards all kinds of people, of supremacism, of chosen peopleism, of the idea that some kind of people are more privileged in the eyes of God, and the Palestinians are clearly in the school of this thing called terrorism. And, you know, Netanyahu is a master of using this concept of Islamic terror as a political bicycle, as a political engine for his career, for his incredible career. And let's remember that he got 39 standing ovations in Congress. And so he is arguably the most influential person in the world in terms of influencing Congress. And Congress is bought and paid for because the system of banking produces a tremendous concentration of wealth, which goes into a very specific ethnic channels and whatnot, and enables Zionists to purchase the presidents, the Congress people, the corporations, the media, the courts. And okay, we're now sort of face to face with this fact that any concept, that there is anything like a rule of law in charge here, has been wiped away. You know, it's been unmasked. And I think my colleague brings up this population scheme. I mean, let's remember that Netanyahu was quite involved in the COVID scam and was, you know, dealing with Albert Bourla, and millions of people have died worldwide.
Okay,
from
let me cross over and get Harley back in on this conversation. I mean, your take, when we see on a daily basis, we see various international organizations, they may condemn what is happening and say that relief is needed. At the bottom line, nothing really happens. And so when we say that, or we see that none of these international organizations are able to do what they say they are set up to do, isn't that evidence that either they were set up to begin with just to protect American interests, or they fear the reprisals from the American regime. And either way, that these organizations cannot truly serve the world's people. I mean, your assessment, and do we not need an alternative to all of this?
Well, we absolutely need an alternative, and it's starting to come into existence. I agree with everything that you said and that Anthony said about the question of Zionism, except that I see Zionism as a tool of the biggest powers in the world, and Zionism is really racism. He's absolutely right about that, Jewish supremacy. But it doesn't represent a Jewish religious view. The important thing is Zionism was used by the British at the beginning of the last century as a way of controlling the geopolitical situation in what we call today the Middle East. And it's being used again for the same purpose. And if I can just make this point, we're seeing emerge the biggest anti-colonial reaction in the world, of which the uprising in Gaza is a part of it. But it's also part of the global South rising up against the International Monetary Fund, against the Green Agenda, against U.S. and British imperialism, against French imperialism. We're seeing a global reawakening, and this is what is actually happening. The problem is the people who are responsible for this imperial geopolitical game are willing to kill large numbers of people, including leaders of nations, assassinations, regime change. Look at the U.S. policy toward Iraq, toward Afghanistan, toward Syria, towards Libya, towards Lebanon. But one of the things that's important to note, and this is where I think the alternative can come from, the BRICS. The new members of the BRICS are all in this region. And the question is, will Russia and China step forward more than they have so far as a counterweight to the United States? The United States is trying to destroy Russia and Ukraine. It's not working. But this is where the alternative system can come from, de-dollarization, control of oil. You know, the new members of the BRICS include Saudi Arabia, UAE, Iran, and Egypt, among them leading powers in the energy field. So this can be broken, but it has to be broken on top of everything else by the American people, and they have to stop sitting there watching on television and doing nothing. And what my organization is involved in the United States is building an international peace coalition which will force the hand of the Congress to act against this. That's a hard thing to do because the Congress is bought and paid, but ultimately they have to get votes.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Well, what about a possibility of actually Americans not paying their taxes, Anthony? I mean, could that be an effective tool to have a major effect on American policy, or how do you see it?
Well, that is a kind of obvious thing to do when you see the money being used to promote genocide. We have an abstract view of it supplying bombs and such, but now we see it close up. Now, the American people, like people throughout the West, are experience what it feels like to be colonized, to be subject to a government that may pretend to listen to you, but really has no interest in you. Now, this global South, this BRICS, these are people who lived in colonies of Europe. And, you know, they've been around in different forms in different ways. Now, BRICS was created by Goldman Sachs. That was a concept. So there is a kind of banker's infiltration taking place. And WEF also uses the word multipolarism, like Russia does. There's a certain way that language is, you know, there's an ambivalence to it. But I'm thinking back in the 1950s and 1960s, the people who we now call the Global South, they were coming together in the non-aligned movement that came together at Bandung. And they were trying to avoid the imperialism of the Cold War, this being forced into a choice. You can either choose the Soviet or the U.S. system, but you've got to choose between the two. And they said, no, we want to be our own people. We want to have our own self-determination. We don't want to have this false choice forced on us. So this non-aligned movement now appears as, you know, the Global South, BRICS. And it's, again, a question of, well, we were colonized. Our parents know what it means to live in a colonized situation. The Palestinians right now are manifesting what it means to be colonized, to not even have your lives being considered as worthy of sustaining, let alone your capital or your businesses or your natural resources. Now it's the very lives that are to be removed. And there is this feeling in Europe and in America and in my country in Canada that we are being colonized, and we, the people of the world, are being ignored, and we are being run through a series of stages into our demise, into sickness, into enfeeblement. We're going to stop oil and gas. We're just going to make a monastic vow, and we can't have fertilizer, and we can't have, we've got to live in 15-minute cities, and then along comes, COVID, and along comes Gaza, and so this urgency for the people of the world to find a way, you know, not through the United Nations, unless the United Nations can do something to demonstrate it's not irrelevant. United Nations is basically a place where the likes of Biden, just show they're in charge, the veto that we just saw one country express because they were a winner in World War II. It's kind of the last possibility for the UN to show some capacity to be a focus of global mobilization for justice. But somehow or other, it's this colonization process, settler colonialism. Of course, in 1967, when all of this was taking place, Israel was conquering the territories that were meant to be part of the Arab country in Resolution 181. And so they were doing a war of imperial conquest as decolonization was happening elsewhere in the world. And that's Israel's big problem. They are the inheritors of the Anglo-American Empire. They are the cutting edge. They are the embodiment of imperialism. And they've got to try to appear like they're not.
Okay.
But they are the embodiments and inheritors of the worst, most brutal oppression of imperialism that since 1492 has been, you know, very clear.
Okay. Well, Harley, I mean, as the world is witnessing this genocide live, how do you think it will be affected, the world itself? I mean, is this the transition point? Are we transforming from this control of this liberal world order to an alternative? Or where do you see us as a human race? I mean, where are we right now if you had to assess what's going on and where we're going?
Well, we're in a transition period. The problem is a transition period can be very long and very deadly for people who lack power. I mean, if you look at the Palestinians, they don't have an army. They have committed fighters, but they don't have an army. They're up against jets and rockets and AI and all the capabilities that the United States can pour into Israel. And if it worst comes to worst, Israel still has nuclear weapons. So the question here, I think my colleague is absolutely right. This is the ultimate battle against a colonial system. And we never had a full decolonization in the 50s and 60s. This was the whole point of the post-Bretton Woods system, where instead of having new institutions of economic development, it was a dollar system. It was controlled by London and Wall Street. It still is. Israel is a junior partner in this, but a very bloody, dangerous junior partner. So the question that you just posed is absolutely right. Will the people in the West who are suffering, I mean, look, I live in Germany. Germany is going into a fairly deep collapse. The political parties are hated by most people, and yet they're passive in the face of this. And the German government is going out and threatening people. If you speak out against Israel, you're an anti-Semite, you're a Hitler. So they're using the most brutal tactics in the West to silence opposition to this colonial system. But it's not going to stop it. And as long as the Palestinians are demonstrating this form of courage and fighting, it should inspire people in other nations. And I don't mean necessarily fighting. I mean forming alliances to run out of office these corrupt individuals who have become extremely wealthy as a result of their support for the military-industrial complex. So it is a transition period. It's going to take longer than I think most people would like. But in the end, the U.S., if it doesn't change its policy, it has already lost credibility. All parties. Israel has lost credibility for the next hundreds of years. And the question then is, can we bring something new out of this, which does recognize the humanity of all people, as opposed to accepting the idea that some people are more deserving of life than others?
Okay, and on that note, I'd like to thank both of you for being with me for this spotlight. Anthony Hall out of Lethbridge, Canada, Harley Schlenker out of Potsdam, Germany. And thank you for being with us on another spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi, signing off for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran.
Supplication is the wealth of the believer and the bridge by which one achieves proximity to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the Exalted.
A path to salvation, a way to connect the two worlds. On the program, Bridge.
You're listening to the program Bridge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Mahdi.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Dear listeners to IRIB English Radio, peace and blessings be on each and every one of you. We are together with the program Bridge, talking about the du'as and supplications of Sahifa Sajjadiyah, the inheritance and legacy of Imam Zain al-Abidin alayhi salam. On the 10th dua that we want to start talking about, inshallah, and contemplating and spend the next few episodes of this program on contemplating together and conferring upon the phrases and statements of this dua, Imam alayhi salam is seeking asylum with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. He is teaching us how to seek asylum to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. The reason we need to seek asylum to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is that there is no rescue but Him. There is no refuge but Him. Anyone that you go to in the times of difficulties and hardships during this life of dunya will reject you. The moment people will know that you're going through a difficult times, it's their turn and their call to leave you alone. When would you know this? When you're under the depth or under the load of the tests of life. A family member gets sick, the job is being lost and you're laid off or suspended from work. Your status becomes ruined for situations that were out of your control, and you're expecting others to help you. There's nobody out there. when the situation goes out of the boundaries of normality and you see no one there. It's when it's the time, that golden opportunity to again remember that Allah is the only one who can provide for you and support you. And that is why we need to seek asylum from the difficulties and hardships of the life of this dunya to or with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Imam alayhi salam is teaching us lessons with the language of dua. Let's take a quick break and come back.
A path to salvation. A way to connect the two worlds.
The bridge between Allah and His creation.
A bridge that is meant to take us to Allah, to take us to His proximity. A bridge that is in the form of dua and supplication.
In this program, we offer commentary on the du'as of As-Sahifatu Sajjadiyah of Imam Sajjad alayhi salatu wasalam.
The famous book of litanies, the Psalms of Islam.
Bridge.
Rabbana, Rabbana,
all right, dear listeners to IRIB English Radio, the program Bridge is here. And we were talking about the very initial phrase, the opening statement of the dua. Imam starts with this beautiful, beautiful language of supplicating to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. He says, Allahumma, O Allah, Ya Allah, I call upon you with the purest of intentions, with zero hope in others and absolute hope only in you. Allahumma, in tasha ta'ifu anna fabithadlik. If thou willest, if you decide, you are the one that your decision is the only thing that matters in life, in this entire universe. No one else's decision precedes over yours. In tasha, if you want, if thou willest, thou wilt pardon us through thy bounty. If you decide, if you make decision to forgive us, it's out of your fadl, it's out of your bounty, it's out of your mercifulness. It's not because we deserve forgiveness. If you accept us, it doesn't mean we deserved it. We worked hard for it. And then it says, وَإِن تَشَأْ تُعَذِّبُنَا فَبَعَدْلِكَ. And if thou willest, if you want to punish us, chastise us through, it's through your justice. No one will say why on the day of judgment, if you decide to punish anyone that deserves punishment, the adl and the justice of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, if implemented on the day of judgment, maybe except a few, maybe only the infallible will end up in the heaven. فَعَدْلُكَ مُهْلِكِ. Your justice will kill me. That's why ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in our daily salah to deal us with His fadl. Let's take a break and come back.
Listening to the program Bridge on IRIB English Radio.
Welcome
All right, we're back. Oh Allah, we ask you to deal with us with your mercifulness. There's so much that can be said about the fadl of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala versus His justice and adl. His mercifulness, His beneficence in terms of looking at us and our case of actions or our course of actions in the life of dystonia versus His justice. If it is with His justice, then no one can survive. No one can successfully make it through. فَسَحِّلْ لَنَا عَفْوَكَ بِمَنِّكَ. Oh Allah, make our ways smooth to Thy pardon through Thy kindness. فَسَحِّلْ لَنَا عَفْوَكَ عَفْوَكَ بِمَنِّكَ. Make your forgiveness easy for us. Make it something that we get inclined to. We are in your hand. We are under your absolute control. وَأَجِرْنَا مِنْ عَذَابِكَ بِتَجَاوُزِكَ. And give us refuge. Grant us asylum from your punishment بِتَجَاوُزِكَ, by your forbearance. Bear with us, Ya Allah. Inshallah, one day we'll become better people. Inshallah, one day we'll change. And our change will come in this lifespan of our dunya. In this very world and in this one only chance of living in this world that we have. If any reform is going to take place, it should be in the life of this dunya. Once the death comes, everything terminates. The file is closed. There's nothing more that you can add, except very few things that might your descendants, your relatives, those who remain after you would do for you. But it's your actions. O Allah, وَأَجِرْنَا مِنْ عَذَابِكَ بِتَجَاوُزِكَ. Forbear with us and seek, give us asylum, grant us asylum with your forbearance from punishing us, inshaAllah. Oh Allah, save us from the hellfire. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Mahdi in the program Bridge on RIB English Radio.
هرگز نگیرد تا ابد آقا کسی جای تو را هرگز مخواد از کف دهم عشق و تولای تو را
یا سجاد.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Iruba Shavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
The 19th meeting of the International Muslim Forum of Russia and the Islamic World took place in the presence of religious scholars, ambassadors, and political figures from 18 countries in the Moscow Cathedral Mosque on Tuesday. The meeting was overshadowed by the Israeli onslaught on Gaza, and this was the main theme of speeches by Sunni and Shia scholars and participants in this summit. At the beginning of the meeting, Mufti Ravil Gaynuddin, the Grand Mufti of Russia, voiced his support for the resistance of the people of Gaza against the Zionist regime and called for Muslims to join hands to help stop the genocide in Gaza.
We call on the parties to the conflict to refrain from escalating it, ensure security, stop the death of civilians, and move towards a full dialogue based on the peace initiatives of regional and world powers, including Russia.
Hujjatul Islam Hamid Shahriari, the Secretary General of the Iran-based World Forum for Proximity of Islamic Schools of Thought, noted that according to the Quran, justice is the highest and the most important social value that God has emphasized. The Iranian cleric pointed out that now is the time to appeal to the peace-loving and free peoples of the world to help support the Palestinians. He stressed that the Palestine conflict is the top priority of the Islamic world.
The role of the clergy is very important nowadays because we can see the cruelty all over the world. Normally people understand who is who. This is the first time that we can see how many people in the streets against the cruelty, against the killing of women and children in Gaza Strip to follow the order of Quran, the order of Allah to keep from cruelty of the world, to see that the justice is very important nowadays for the world.
Ambassadors of Iran and Palestine denounced the barbaric crimes committed by the Zionists during the past 75 years as a disgrace to humanity.
International organizations have failed to fulfill their role, including the UN Security Council. The role and influence of religious scholars are now significant. Gaza is not just a Muslim issue. It is an issue of humanity, and it's not related to religion. Both Muslims and Christians, everyone should bear responsibility for this, not to mention the Jews. There is no justification for killing vulnerable people, and everyone must do their best to put out the flames of war.
We refuse to leave our land. We know what does it mean, the immigration. We suffered long, more than 75 years. Therefore, every Palestinian in Gaza Strip, they continue to be in their land in spite of all Israeli attack.
Participants also spoke about the need to create an interreligious charter of traditional spiritual values, as well as the role that spiritual leaders can play in resolving the armed conflict in Palestine.
The forum provides a platform for religious leaders to speak out for humanism and the moral foundation of human existence. That comes at a time when those issues are in the spotlight amid the Israeli genocide in Gaza, where people expect the world to help them in the face of the regime's brutalities. Marina Kartunova, the Moscow Grand Mosque.
Another ship bound for Israel was targeted by Yemen's naval forces in the Red Sea, near Bab el-Mandeb. The Norwegian-owned vessel was reportedly carrying fuel to the Israeli regime. According to military officials, the attack came after the vessel ignored several warnings from Yemen.
The naval forces of the Yemeni armed forces carried out a qualitative military operation against the Norwegian ship Stranda, which was loaded with oil and headed to the Israeli entity. The vessel was targeted with a suitable naval missile. Over the past 2 days, the Yemeni armed forces succeeded in preventing the passage of several ships who responded to the warnings of the Yemeni naval forces. We did not resort to targeting the Norwegian ship until its crew rejected all warnings.
The latest attack comes as the Israeli aggression continues to kill innocent Gazans. According to the latest figures, more than 18,000 Palestinians have been killed by Israeli bombings. Yemen's armed forces said they will continue to target Israeli ships until the genocide in Gaza ends.
The Yemeni armed forces confirmed that they continue to prevent ships of all nationalities heading to Israeli ports from navigating in the Arabian and Red Seas until they bring in the food and medicine that our steadfast brothers in the Gaza Strip need.
In response to Yemen's measures near Bab al-Mandeb, U.S. National Security Advisors have called for the formation of a new naval task force to safeguard the Israeli and commercial shipments in the Red Sea.
Yemen's armed and naval forces have sent a strong message to Israel as they continue to impose bans on all cargo shipments to Israel. Yusuf Maudi, Sana'a.
Portray yourself as the one fighting for the people and at the same time fight the same people, your own people. That are how many Iranians describe the Mujahideen-e-Khalq organization, or the MKO. A court session was held in Tehran on Tuesday to address a lawsuit filed against the MKO over its terrorist activities in Iran over the past 40 years. The lawsuit is aimed at highlighting the organization's crimes against the Iranian people and also the Western countries' complicity in these atrocities. Among the participants in the court are families of victims of MKO acts of terror in the 1980s. They blame the Western support for the MKO and want the organization to be brought to justice on an international level.
These terrorists have had an obvious connection with the U.S. in recent years. They have acted in line with the U.S. policies. The U.S., which claims to uphold human rights, has supported these terrorists. We expect the international bodies and tribunals to hold the organization and its supporters to account. Today, in our country, we see that the legal process is going forward, and we hope to see this process on an international level.
The Western countries have talked about human rights for many years, but we see that the human rights they are talking about have time and again been violated by them. The MEK atrocities against Iranians were supported by them.
A woman says MKO terrorists murdered his husband right in front of her and their children in their own house.
My husband was at home that night. Two of the terrorists ran into our house. They beat me and my husband. After that, they started shooting at him right in front of me and my children.
The terrorist organization of MKO has not been convicted by any international judicial body. In the meantime, it has been supported by the Western countries, including the U.S., which makes them complicit in the organization's crimes. Arzan Ashurian, Tehran.
In Latin America, the Palestinian cause is seen as more than just politics. It is seen as a deeply important humanitarian issue. Across the region, people have showed up in great numbers in rallies held in solidarity with Palestinians being subjected to Israel's genocidal war on Gaza. Some of the Latin American administrations have also moved ahead of verbal condemnations and took more decisive actions. For instance, Chile's government recalled its ambassador. Bolivia, Argentina, and Mexico severed ties with the regime, and the Honduran government urgently summoned its ambassador for consultations. The resounding support for Palestine from Latin American nations that have had lots of great anti-oppression figures with resistance values like Simon Bolivar, Jose Marti, Fidel Castro, and Che Guevara is not surprising. In this regard, I talked to three Latin American ambassadors to Iran during their visit to the Latin America Cartoon and Caricature exhibition at the Tehran Museum of Contemporary Arts. Venezuela's ambassador to Iran censured the U.S. unwavering support for Israel, blaming Washington's backing for Tel Aviv as the main culprit for prolongation of Israeli onslaught.
La posición primero.
The U.S. is playing an undeniable role in the developments of Gaza. It has supported the regime's aggression against Palestinians and added fuel to the fire. Days ago, it was the U.S. that vetoed a U.N. Security Council resolution calling for a ceasefire in Gaza. The U.S. is supporting the Israeli genocide of Palestinians and is contributing to the continuation of this massacre.
The Bolivian ambassador also pointed to the U.S. move to veto a U.N. Security Council resolution that would have called for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza.
Unfortunately, we're observing that some international organizations are useless. For instance, a single vote can overturn the decision of the whole world in the UN Security Council. This failed system has led to the prolongation of the Israeli aggression.
Perez Ramos also called on the international community to put an end to the Israeli massacre of civilians.
The Bolivian government, as well as many other nations across the globe, has time and again condemned the Israeli genocide of Palestinians in Gaza. The international community must take more decisive actions to stop the regime's onslaught of Palestinians.
While having an estimated 60,000 Palestinian refugees, including their descendants, in his country, the Brazilian ambassador to Iran refused to directly condemn the U.S.-backed Israeli genocide of Palestinians. He only said it's a pity that the U.S. has blocked efforts to uphold a ceasefire in Gaza.
And we hope the United States will review its position, and we hope Israel also review its position after they see the catastrophe they are doing in Palestine. So I think even hardline countries will have to be sensitive to the tragedy, what is going on in Palestine.
While the Israeli narrative continues falling apart, the truth has been uncovered for Latin Americans, like other people across the globe. That is, Palestinians are the ones subjected to decades of oppression, occupation, and ethnic cleansing.
Israel has for years sought to foster a close relationship with Latin American countries. However, the regime's ongoing onslaught on Palestinians has led to a seismic shift. That is, an exponential surge in anti-Israeli sentiment among Latin American nations. Mahdi Abbosian, Tehran.
Marking Human Rights Day by shedding light on the atrocities committed by the Israeli regime in Gaza and how the international community has failed to uphold what it considers to be a great humanity's achievement. The Foundation of Dialogue and Solidarity of Unified Nations, FODASAN, held its annual international conference on the future of peace and human rights in West Asia, as could be expected, focusing on the numerous instances of violations of international law and the Geneva Convention in particular, as Israeli attacks continue in Gaza.
Quite naturally, conference that puts the spotlight on the issue of human rights cannot be indifferent to the developments in Gaza. As we tend to discuss human rights in West Asia, we obviously have to examine how the Universal Declaration of Human Rights affects the lives of human beings in practical measures. What are the consequences when it's not observed? So in a way, today, we try to be the voice of the oppressed people in Gaza.
As one of the three pillars of the United Nations, it seems that the human rights is the one mostly neglected compared to peace and security and development.
The fact that there are many unresolved issues that can lead to wars in the West Asia region make it inevitable for us to discuss the issue of human rights violations during wars in this region.
As explained by the participants, the Geneva Convention is therefore considered the most challenging to implement, as the inability of the UN to stop Israeli atrocities and standing up for the people of Gaza has now come to light.
Just because actors violate international law, it doesn't kind of undermine the validity of international law. It just means that we need to work on better enforcement and better accountability mechanisms that we do always better in terms of implementation. Unfortunately, it seems that the 75 years that the Universal Declaration of Human Rights now is in existence, I think we have made progress in some parts, but we have also incurred many setbacks. And all I can hope is that we draw our lessons out of this horrible situation, and that wisdom will prevail and a sustainable solution for peace will prevail.
Established in 2017, the Foundation of Dialogue and Solidarity of Unified Nations attempts to take positive steps in applying the concepts of human rights, particularly in a region where it is mostly overlooked. FODASAN hopes that by shedding light on the shortcomings that exist, it can bring a change for the better. The participants of the 5th International Conference on the Future of Peace and Human Rights in West Asia believe that so far the international community has not demonstrated the willpower to properly implement the Geneva Convention, and what's happening in Gaza is a clear example of that. Gisumish Ahmadi, Tehran.
The streets of the occupied West Bank are empty. Transportation is disrupted while institutions, banks, schools, ministries, businesses, and shops are closed as part of a global strike that was declared in protest of Israel's ongoing genocide on the Gaza Strip. Palestinian activists and grassroots organizations have called for the global strike to demand an immediate ceasefire as Israel continues its aggression on Gaza. The call for the strike here has been decided by the National and Islamic Forces, who also called for the Palestinians from all walks of life to rally on this day for the sake of their own people being slaughtered by Israel in Gaza.
The whole world is on strike today. This strike is unprecedented in history. This stresses that all the globe is with the Palestinians. This comprehensive strike that has paralyzed all aspects of life in the occupied territories means the failure of the official level and the Security Council and the international arena to put an end to the Israeli occupation and its aggression.
We believe that it is important to show that there is a solidarity with the Palestinian people and that the world, young people mainly, and the citizens of the world, if you like, if we can say so, are against this war or against this aggression against the Palestinian people and against this genocide.
The protests come only a few days after the United States vetoed the UN Security Council resolution that called for an immediate humanitarian ceasefire in the Gaza Strip. Protesters here say the strike is also a message to the U.S. administration that stands against the aspirations of the Palestinians. They believe the U.S. is not only preventing an end to this war, but also backing the occupying regime to go on with its genocidal war.
It's also a message to the American administration that has used the veto while 13 countries rejected this aggression. This veto by the American administration gives a green light to Israel to go on and escalate its massacre of our people in Gaza Strip.
For 66 days, the Israeli military continued its onslaught on the blockaded Gaza, killing some 18,000 Palestinians and wounding nearly 50,000, the majority of whom women and children. Ending the Israeli genocide in the Gaza Strip and declaring a permanent ceasefire are today's urgent calls, not only of the Palestinians here in the occupied territories, but also of the free people all over the globe. Mona Kandil, occupied Ramallah.
Activists in Seoul, South Korea, continued their campaign to protest Israel's atrocities against Palestinians. As Israel's attacks on Gaza enters its third month, Tel Aviv's indiscriminate killing and illegal tactics are communicated to a growing audience.
Israeli media reported that Israeli forces have created a so-called massacre factory where they're intentionally targeting civilians using AI. And the U.S. is approving this. It's becoming clear that both the U.S. and Israel are war criminals in this genocide.
The killing of prominent Palestinians such as poet Rafat Al-Arir put more names and faces to Israel's crimes. Young people around the world are understanding that the diplomatic protection Israel receives from the United States in its UN Security Council veto costs lives.
When the UN vote concluded, I couldn't believe that they were really concerned about the loss of life. The United Nations should have called for a ceasefire. I am really disappointed that the UN seems like it wants world peace, but then says that such massacres are okay.
South Korea abstained from the most recent UN vote calling for a ceasefire. Still, as some Americans' criticism of Israel is muzzled, protesters in South Korea can say what they mean. As Israel continues its onslaught against the Palestinian people, the subject seems to have declined in prominence in the mainstream media around the globe. These demonstrators here, circling the Israeli embassy week in and week out, seek to remind people that the Israeli army is killing an innocent woman or child every few minutes. Frank Smith, Seoul.
This is Back to Reality. Back to Reality.
It's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome back to a new episode of your very favorite Back to Reality. Well, this is Asma, your host. Once again, I have the honor to be here at your service,